Hey everybody, welcome to the Vet Tech Cafe. The Vet Tech Cafe is a podcast centered around veterinary technicians and nurses, hosted by myself, Dave Cowan, and my good friend Jeff Backus. We strive to discuss current issues facing our profession and give our colleagues a voice and a medium to enter into these discussions. Our guests are experts in the field that we hope can help our listeners work towards dealing with these issues, as well as coming up with solutions that can lead to change. If you have a question or comment for us, please contact us at vettechcafe@gmail.com. Without further ado, grab yourself a cup of coffee and get ready for another episode of the Vet Tech Cafe. Hello, everybody. Thank you very much for stopping by the Vet Tech Cafe. Definitely interesting and a little bit scary times we're living in right now. Dave, how are you holding up down there?
I'm holding up okay. I worked a shift today. It was the first shift I worked in a while. And just dealing with all the new protocols for how we're dealing with coronavirus was a little bit jarring and something that I wasn't really prepared for. All the stuff that we did was so much different than what we used to do.
Right.
You know, meeting owners in the car and doing triage over the phone. You know, it just kind of brought everything into perspective that, wow, this is a real serious issue that we're dealing with right now.
Yeah.
And I know a lot of our listeners have been dealing with this all week. And, you know, I've been out of school for the last week. Our school is shut down for the foreseeable future. So I've transitioned to teaching my classes online, which is a little bit of a challenge in and of itself. But, you know, it's something that we're trying to get used to and adjusted to the new reality that we're dealing with right now. You know, we're getting through it. Things are going okay at this point, but we'll see what's happened. How are you doing? I know you're halfway through your 14-day quarantine?
Yeah. So, you know, we recorded this episode originally on, I believe it was Friday night, February 28th. And,
right.
And our guest was in Cambodia, so it was Saturday morning for her, and we talked a little bit about coronavirus, and I think at the time she said she had one case, and we'll move forward to that here in a minute. But the reason we recorded this so long ago is my wife and I were headed out on our honeymoon, and we were in St. Lucia, and probably 3 days after we were down there, I was notified from work that I'll be on a mandatory 14-day self-quarantine from work for having traveled internationally. And I keep looking at the tracker. So far, there's still only two cases reported from St. Lucia. So hopefully that stays the course. But so I still have, I think, another 9 or 10 days left of my self-quarantine. Oof. And then Molly's hospital did the same for her. Thankfully, her hospital stepped up and is covering the quarantine period for her. And I have several weeks of sick time through Tufts, so my quarantine time, I don't have to worry about the financial aspect of that. But it was definitely a really interesting experience because we at least knew something about it when we talked to our guest, because we talked to her about it, and she was in Southeast Asia at the time. Like, was this something she was dealing with? And I think in the US, we didn't really have any effect of it. And then I left the country and I was kind of watching it from afar. And, you know, there was a couple people with masks on the flight down, and but it was an island that a huge portion, their almost entire economy is based on tourism. So it was really business as usual down there, and no sign of it at the resort. And other than maybe halfway through, this cruise ships stopped coming into port. That was probably the only difference that I noticed. And so there was several thousand less people around town, which was probably a good thing. but you know, now that we're back, neither of us are sick or symptomatic or anything like that at this point. So we're kind of taking it as an additional 2 weeks to our honeymoon and trying to just, you know, relax and enjoy time together and do puzzles and do activities and find things to do and what have you. So it's definitely been a little bit of an interesting time, but I'm glad to finally get this episode out there. And and the other cool thing was we did something super cool just before we started recording this intro. We'll talk about that.
Oh yeah, we are part of, there's a Facebook group where there's a bunch of veterinary podcasters. So it's us, the Vet Tech Cafe. It's also Internal Medicine for Vet Tech Podcast. Radio Vet Nurse is there. Anesthesia Nerds and Two Vets Talk Pets is on there as well. And we recorded it was quite a lengthy episode. I'm hoping it's going to get edited down. But we talked about the coronavirus. We talked about COVID-19. We talked about plans for how you're dealing with it in your hospital and things that we're supposed to be doing. And just try to get some information out there because, you know, it's something that's been, it's so much into the social conscious right now of everything that's going on, and just trying to wrap our heads around it and bring some light to the information. And one of the things that I feel like we talked about a lot is with social media, a lot of the information that we get is not researched and is just haphazardly put out there, either because they think it's funny or because they want to get
clicks
or traffic to their page, things like that.
People know other people are scared and they're going to click on it and they're going to read it. Like,
So that was one of the big things that I enjoyed about that recording that we just did, is making sure that the information you're getting is from a reliable source.
Yeah.
And not only that, but making sure that the reliable source is up to date. Because as we know, like we said, we recorded this episode 3 weeks ago and the landscape has changed in 3 weeks.
Yeah.
Like we said, the guest that we talked to for this episode was in Cambodia. And at the point we recorded, I think she said there was only one confirmed case.
Yeah.
And we just looked just a couple of minutes ago and now there's 53 that are in Cambodia at this point. So, you know, this is growing and things are changing. So information that you got, make sure you know what date it's from, because if it was from a week ago or 2 weeks ago or even 2 days ago, chances are that information is not accurate anymore.
Yeah.
So making sure you know exactly what you're looking at and knowing the sources that you are. I'm guilty of this too, is I see things on social media and I just look at it and I say, that's funny. That's kind of interesting.
Share.
I'm going to share that. I'm going to share that without actually investigating it.
Yep.
And making sure that we're not doing that, because spreading that misinformation is just going to make things worse for everybody.
Yeah, agree. And I thought one of the cool things was, you know, anybody out there that's listening, of course, probably know I'm in New England, you're down in North Carolina, but all of the other podcast hosts that we had tonight, Yvonne is in the Bay Area of San Francisco, Jordan's down in South Carolina, but works in Georgia, Radio Vet Nurse is in Northern Australia, Two Vets Talk Pets is in Southern Australia, and then Veterinary Anesthesia Nerds, Tasha is in Philadelphia. So we all kind of talked about what life looks like in our areas and what clinics are doing in our areas, or different things that have been done, different protocols that are in place, both in clinic and in community. And especially hearing from the Aussies, you know, that they're, as they said, kind of maybe a couple weeks behind us, and that their case count is still very low and they're still kind of in that very early phase. So hearing some of that and them kind of leaning on us to see where we were at this point in time. And just for a little bit of point of reference, so here it is Saturday night, March 21st. And, you know, we talked about this earlier before we started recording. I've been a huge fan of tracking on the Johns Hopkins University of Medicine tracker page. And as we've said throughout, we're kind of stat geeks, so this really speaks to me. But so as of right now, let's see the timestamp on this as it comes up is 9:13 p.m. So about 20 minutes ago, 304,544 total confirmed around the world. The U.S. is now third in terms of cases confirmed at 25,493. When I looked at this morning, the U.S. was in sixth with only about 18,000. So
on our way back up to number one.
Yeah. definitely, what I want to get out of that is very dynamic situation. And it's also like, if you like infographics and looking at some of that kind of stuff, you know, you can find it pretty easily through the CDC, or if you just look for Johns Hopkins COVID-19, it'll be one of the first things you find. But they also have now a running tracker of total recovered. And that's one other thing I want to say is, while there have been to this point a total of 12,974 deaths, there have been 91,681 that are totally recovered. So that is at least something positive to draw on. So
yeah, I think we should focus on the positive on some of these things, just because.
Agreed.
And looking at the U.S., we only have 171 recovered. So that's
yeah.
I mean, we're a little bit behind the curve.
And I think part of that is too, because so many of these recovered are from China, who has been at this now for a bit longer than we have.
Exactly.
So hopefully, as you know, another maybe 2 to 3 weeks go by, maybe our recovered will start to climb a bit. But
yeah, I think maybe we can post the link to this.
Yeah, I think that'd
be great. This nerdy little website that we're looking at right now.
Yeah, for sure. So, you know, we talked about my quarantine a little bit. You've had to transition to online courses.
Yes. Yeah. They told us two Fridays ago, they said that we were going to be shutting down as of the 23rd, which is this coming Monday, that we would be having class last week. And then they told us on Sunday night that we were shutting down this week. So we were shut down as of the 16th. So we kind of skipped Monday and Tuesday. We didn't have classes Monday and Tuesday. The fortunate thing for this is that last week was finals week. So most of my classes were just review sessions.
Okay.
So we jumped onto Google Meet and I ran through the review sessions. And, you know, I think it really helped out, because They all did fairly well on the finals. I don't know if it's the fact that because they were online finals, they had access to information that they wouldn't have if they were taking the exam in the classroom. But I did give them a fairly strict time limit, so they weren't just sitting there leafing through their books to find answers.
Right.
But I feel like doing that at that time was a huge help for me to figure out exactly how I'm going to run classes next week.
Yeah.
It's like that trial period where I'm not giving lecture. We're just in Google Meet and having a conversation, which mm-hmm. I felt was much easier for the students to get used to it and be aware of how things are going to work moving forward. That being said, I also have to teach anatomy and physiology section 2, which in, I think, week 2, we have a lab where we're doing dissections and looking at the digestive and respiratory system. So I'm not sure how exactly I'm going to do that over the online. However, I did find, and we talk about this a lot in the Tap Room episodes of what's one positive thing that we can think about right now. And one positive thing I'm seeing is that there's a lot of companies and a lot of sources that are offering their materials for free. Mm-hmm. And I found that Colorado State University is allowing their virtual anatomy lab available for free.
Wow.
And it used to be, it was a paid service, and I think it cost maybe $30 or $50. But I was able to download it, and as I'm looking through it, I was, you know, looking through some of the models. I'm like, this is better than I would have done, like, showing them in an actual lab. And so I'm actually going to go through that and do that moving forward, because I want them to have the hands-on, but if we're not able to do that, this is probably the next best thing.
Yeah.
And, you know, my school shut down for 2 weeks. Like, we're scheduled to be back in on campus on the 6th of April. But I'm not banking on that, because as this changes, unless we see drastic changes of the spread, I don't see us going back any sooner than a month into this.
Yeah.
I could be wrong in that, but, you know, that's just my gut feeling right now. So I'm planning for being out of school for at least a month.
Yeah. You know, it's funny you say that, because I still have like 9 or 10 days of quarantine, and I get, if not at least an email a day, probably a couple of emails a day from Tufts about different protocols changing,
yeah,
things changing.
Yeah.
And I haven't been there now in, I guess, 2.5, maybe even, yeah, probably 2.5 weeks, or maybe close to 3 weeks, whatever it is now. And I'm following along, but I'm not actually immersed in it. And I keep thinking to myself, like, I also can't get so bogged down with this, because when I go back in 9 or 10 days, it's going to be completely different.
Yeah, everything's going to be changed.
It's changing every day. Yeah. And you know, so far, thankfully, we have a few people on quarantine, to my knowledge, but we haven't had anybody test positive. You know, if somebody does, I'm sure that changes things. So
yeah,
it's like, we actually said this on the podcast we were recording earlier, like, try not to get bogged down with just overloading yourself.
Yeah.
With information and you know, just really wearing yourself out. And you were saying, you know, about something positive in the CSU anatomy being free. One other one I think we should point out is the Recover Initiative right now for veterinary students or veterinary technician students, which I think is so great.
Yeah.
The online ALS and BLS are free. And that's huge.
Yeah.
You know, so anybody that's a teacher out there that's listening, for any vet tech program, or if you're a vet tech student or a veterinary student, go to recoverinitiative.org, sign up, get those done while it's free. Can't beat it.
Yeah, no, you can't. And as students, you know, as veterinarians, they're going to come out of vet school with a lot of knowledge, but mm-hmm. as veterinary technicians coming out of school with Recover certification, that's going to be,
that's huge.
So,
well, what do you think? Should we go ahead and move on to the episode?
Yeah, we'll move on to the episode. And, you know, we kind of didn't record an intro for this episode on purpose, because we knew that 3 weeks down the road, everything was going to be changed.
Yeah.
And we wanted to talk about something that was relevant. And, you know, we talked to her about coronavirus in the episode, but I feel like I don't think we anticipated it was going to be this drastic of a change.
Absolutely not. It was not the worldwide event. Pandemic, probably the better word to use there. It was not the pandemic that it is now. And so I'm glad we ended up doing it this way.
Yeah.
And, and as we move forward, we've got a couple of great guests we're working on lining up for the next few episodes. So keep tuned for that, and enjoy the episode, everybody. We're super excited to have our guest on today. Her name is Amber LaRocque. She's an LVT licensed in the state of Texas. She went to Cedar Valley Veterinary Technology Program there in Texas and practiced in emergency medicine for a little while, and now largely spends a lot of her time in foreign countries practicing veterinary medicine as a veterinary technician. And if for our listeners out there, if you don't already follow her page on Instagram, it's at VetTechAndTravel. It's one of our favorite pages to follow because there's some really cool content on there, a lot of cool things that she's doing. And so we're going to talk to her a lot about all that she's done and how she got started, because I know a lot of people listening would love to do that very same thing and just kind of need a kick in the pants on on how to get started on doing that. So without further ado, Amber, welcome to the Vet Tech Cafe. Thank you so much for being with us tonight.
Thank
for us
you for
tomorrow
having
morning
me.
For you.
Yes, it is morning time over here.
Yeah, so since it's morning time, it's Friday night at 9 o'clock for Dave and I, but let's at least get you a cup of coffee. I'm having hazelnut coffee. What can we get you?
What I am actually drinking right now is a Cambodian espresso.
Oh.
My coffee journey has went from frappuccinos to just double shots of espresso in the last few months.
Finally, somebody on the Vet Tech Cafe that has a coffee drink that's respectable to me.
Right. I know it. Yeah.
Some of the stuff that Jeff drinks, so I'm like, what are you doing?
Is coffee pretty like a staple out there? Is it?
Oh yeah.
Something that's pretty. That's awesome.
Yeah, I've never. Southeast Asia in general, there's coffee shops everywhere. Coffee is a big deal. There's little stands on every corner. It's huge here.
And they're not just Starbucks, right? They're not just
right. Hey, there's only Starbucks. I think there's two Starbucks in this whole city, but that's like considered the bottom of the barrel here.
Oh wow, that's great.
They have like their own chain coffees, but the best ones are like the cute little cafes that make their
the
own
local
brew
ones,
and everything.
Yeah, that's great.
The coffee, I'm guessing, is grown somewhere in Southeast Asia, right?
Like exactly, probably out in one of the provinces. But I know they do some here, and then they get a lot of their coffee beans from Vietnam as well.
Wow. Oh, okay, great.
Yeah.
Awesome. So we always kind of start out with, and what we're going to talk to you a lot about today is career path. You know, there's a lot of veterinary technicians that, you know, work in a clinic and struggle sometimes to see life as a veterinary technician beyond that. And you know, what we know about your path is really intriguing. I think a lot of people are really going to enjoy hearing about it. So talk a little bit about your career path, how you kind of got to where you are, and what your career looks like at this point in time.
Okay, so I started working with animals when I was 16, probably like a lot of people. I was a kennel tech just at a tiny clinic in my hometown in Grand Prairie, Texas. So I was a kennel tech for a while, and that's just how I realized, you know, I think I really want to do this. So when I graduated high school, I started the Cedar Valley Vet Tech program in Lancaster. And during that time, I actually thought I wanted to work with large animals like equine and cattle.
Oh, okay.
But I found very quickly that I am not made for that. I did like an equine reproduction class, and that showed me I am just not tough enough for these creatures. So, when I graduated from the vet tech program, probably like a lot of people encounter, you have to do your co-op where you work at a practice and get some experience while you're in school. So for whatever reason, I just was like, you know, I want to dabble in emergency medicine. I want to learn as much as I possibly can. And I had been a waitress and like kind of bartended all through college. So I liked the fast paced life, you know?
Sure. Mm-hmm.
So I thought it'd be perfect. And I got
lucky. You're preaching to the choir over here.
Yeah.
Right. So, I got lucky and I actually went into an ER near me that had a student who knew my teacher in the course. Hmm. So that made them kind of keen to hiring a student. So I essentially did my co-op at the ER, and that was like my interview. And then they used that at the end. I got hired once I graduated. And I worked at the ER up until, you know, a few months ago. I'd been there for about 4.5 years. And just during that time, it just kind of something in me just really wanted to see more of the world. I got my first taste of traveling when I traveled with the Loop Abroad group. They've gotten really big recently. You might have seen them. Okay. Have you ever seen them on social media or anything?
I haven't seen them.
I don't think
Okay.
So.
So, I think one doctor that they just hired on who will probably get them a lot of exposure, you might have seen the Jungle Doctor before.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I've heard of that. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So they just hired her on and she has a big following. So hopefully that'll start to give them, you know, the exposure they deserve. But it's basically a program that they're centered in different parts of the world where when I first started, it was just in Thailand where they let you volunteer at a local dog and cat rescue. And then you spent a week volunteering at the Elephant Nature Park in Chiang Mai.
Oh,
so,
great.
Yeah. So I kind of, right when I graduated from the vet tech program, I ended up traveling with the Loop Abroad group for 2 weeks. And that just opened up my eyes to travel. And ever since then, I just kind of spent the next few years, you know, working my butt off for the majority of the year and saving for one big volunteer trip a year.
Okay.
And, you know, I loved that, but I just wanted to travel more because all of those experiences were amazing, but they always ended, you know, and I just wanted to find a way to full-time travel. And so that's kind of what led me to where I am now. I kind of created an online career that lets me work from anywhere.
Wow. And didn't you just say that you didn't really want to work with large animals and then
I know,
now you're
right?
Working with elephants?
Hey, I guess the exception is elephants, okay? That's the one exception.
Yeah, I can
know.
See that being the case too.
So what...
Right, exactly.
What brought you to Cambodia? And is that your home right now or is that just where you're currently working?
It is. It's my home until the first week of April.
Okay.
I actually, this will kind of be a curveball. Whenever I was trying to decide how to full-time travel, I dabbled into a lot of different options. Mm-hmm. And at that point, I had been working at the ER for about 3 years. And I thought, you know, maybe a change of pace would be nice, like a quick little career change. So I actually got certified to teach English. And
oh, okay.
I know it's super random, but I took an English teaching course in Cambodia. So that's how I was introduced to Cambodia. But, you know, while I was there teaching English, I realized I really don't like this very much. thought it'd be fun to try, but I really liked Cambodia and I loved their animal welfare organization. So that's how I was introduced to Cambodia.
Oh, that's great. And it's crazy that when I hear about people, like I know another guy that went abroad and his foot in the door to get in there was to learn how to teach English. And,
yeah,
you know, if that's what gets you into that realm and then get you to be allowed to do what you want to do, then I think that's a great path.
Yeah.
I think that's something
sure.
that people haven't
it's
really thought of.
It's a wonderful option to always have a way to support yourself overseas. And some people are just, they're brilliant at it. They're amazing. I'm just not one of those people.
Yeah, for sure.
You know? But
well,
yeah, it's
not for everybody.
It's a wonderful option. Exactly. It's definitely not for everybody. And you have to be really passionate about it to do it, you know?
Yeah.
And some people are.
So you said until April. What do you go somewhere else in April? Does something change?
I'm going to Hoi An in Vietnam in April.
Oh, wow.
Yes, I'm excited. Wow. That's the one city that every single traveler that I've asked if they like it, they all say yes. Because you know how some places, it's not everybody's cup of tea. And some people will say, don't go there. No, Hoi An is a city that every single person has loved it.
Wow. And what are you going to be doing the same kind of thing that you're doing there now?
Exactly. I mean, the majority of my days are spent working online writing. So I do that full time. But then there's two different animal organizations in the city that I plan to work with and kind of help. I don't know. You've probably seen maybe the videos I've done with I Heart Dogs about kind of just showing the public.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So we're trying to spread that campaign. It's kind of, I think they called it like I Heart Dogs around the world, essentially. And just to kind of open up the eyes of the public and not just the veterinary public, like the actual public, you know, back home.
Right, right. Sure.
So we just kind of plan to do that in every city I go to. So I think it'll be really fun.
Fantastic. One question I would have, so, and we'll get into more of this a little bit as we go, but so where you are in Cambodia right now, what does veterinary medicine look like there? Or what is the people's reaction to what you're doing for the animals there? Like, is it seem like completely foreign to them? Is it pretty normal? Like, what does that kind of look like?
So I've learned it varies completely depending on the city that you're in. So In Phnom Penh, veterinary medicine is starting to be kind of well known and widely accepted. There are, so I work with the PAWS Clinic. They're more, they cater to foreigners and expats, but a lot of the work that they do is for the Khmer people. Like, this is the clinic that people come to, like the locals, because they know that they have a Khmer staff to speak with them. They have different like options for fundraising. They're not always going to have to be stuck with, like, you know, a big high paying bill. So that's why I really like the company that, you know, I'm essentially working with. But there's a few different clinics in the city now. There's a lot of different organizations that take care of pagoda animals. They, some of the clinics even have like diagnostic tools now. Like, some clinics have x-rays and blood work machines, where a couple years ago that would never have been seen here.
Wow.
So yeah, the PAWS clinic doesn't have any diagnostic tools. So you just have to send out your blood work to other labs. But yeah, so in Phnom Penh, it's starting to become, you know, kind of similar to maybe like a basic day practice back home.
Okay.
But okay, out in the provinces, sometimes you talk to them about spay and neuter and it's like they're hearing it for the first time. So it yeah, just truly yeah, depends on how populated the area that you're in is.
Yeah.
I guess another question that I would have, in pardon my ignorance.
No.
Cambodia, is it an affluent country? Is it a poor country? Like, sure. What is the population?
It's a very
like?
Poor country. Very poor.
Okay. Okay.
Yeah, part of it's a whole other topic in itself to talk about kind of the governmental issues, but essentially, you know, they want the public to stay poor. That's how they kind of control the situation. So a lot of the people are stuck in poverty. So yeah.
So you're having to pick and choose what types of things you want to do for these animals.
Yeah.
In terms of what their care is, just because if you have an animal that needs a lot of care and the people can't afford it, then what is their option at that point?
So that's the most challenging part of working in veterinary medicine here is basically you're always working on a budget. It's kind of like every single client that comes into your day practice back home that only has like $100 to work with. You're doing that every single day, basically.
Right.
Sure.
But honestly, it ends up okay for the most part. The people here are understanding in the sense of, you know, we tried, it's okay. If our animal passes away, it's sad, but at least we tried. A lot of the things that they deal with are just infectious disease. Those are the deadly things. So basically the standard care is just put them in hospital, IV fluids, antibiotics, and it just doesn't go much further than that. There's no options for, you know, blood transfusions, plasma transfusions, or anything like we may do with, you know, parvo cases back home. It's just kind of the bare minimum. You give it everything you have, and that's kind of as far as it goes.
Well, I would imagine that your experience in emergency medicine, not to toot our own horns as emergency techs, but when you work in emergency, a lot of times you do have to adapt to things that are not ideal situations, and
of course,
having to figure out the best way to do things without money.
Yeah, of course. Definitely.
So I'm sure that's helped you out a lot.
It has, for sure. It's definitely helped, especially when they're actually really busy, the PAWS clinic. Like, on any given day, they have like at least like 10 animals in hospital, which is, you know, a lot when you think about it being Cambodia. Wow. So and things are really sick when they come in. They're because the infectious disease is just, it's running rampant here in the animal community. So they always have quite a few sick babies in the hospital.
Sure. I was going to ask, what kind of, in terms of infectious disease, anything we'd be familiar with here in the U.S.?
Oh, yeah, for sure. And it's taught me a lot of things that I didn't know. Because, you know, back home, I see parvo a lot back home, a whole bunch of parvo.
Sure. Yeah.
But I don't see a lot of distemper. I think working in a shelter environment, you might see it more. But in the clinic, you don't have, like, dogs coming in every day with distemper, you know?
Right.
But distemper and parvo are, you know, the big hitters here. And then in the cat community, Panluke and Khaleesi is huge.
Okay. Interesting. Very cool. In terms of your, like, when you're working at the clinic, in terms of fulfilling that veterinary technician role, are you doing the same kind of tasks on the animals that we would expect to do here, like, you know, injectable medications and, you know, whatever else, or do you have a little bit of a different role than what we would be typically used to?
So my role is a little different in the sense that I'm just volunteering with them now. So I did work with PPAWS. Like, actually, I was their practice administrator for a few months back in 2018. And in that position, I did do like normal treatments. They do treatments in the morning, treatments at night, just similar to probably what you would do in a hospital. Things need are due for their medications. They're due for their injectable meds. They need an IV catheter placed, just standard things. But now since I'm volunteering and just kind of focusing on the outreach part of things, gotcha. The most medical stuff that I do now is really just vaccinating, deworming. That's about it now.
Some preventive stuff.
Exactly. Just preventative medicine. And then I'm an assistant like for surgeries when we go on missions and things like that. So,
okay. And is that like the standard vaccinations that we would be familiar with here as well? Again, like rabies?
Yes, exactly. Exactly. Like the distemper parvo combo vaccine. And the biggest thing that we do to all the animals is the rabies vaccine, because sure. That's the most important thing here.
No, that's awesome. That's awesome.
Yeah.
Great to hear.
What kind of stuff do you do with elephants?
So the only thing I have to go off of is when I went there the first time. So I'll just kind of talk a bit about that. But so I'm excited. I'm actually going back in March to volunteer at the Elephant Nature Park, where I'm doing like an actual veterinary program this time around. Okay. Before it was like a veterinary / tour group. So it wasn't as hands-on, but we did things like, you know, we got to be a mahout for a day where we just kind of walked around with the elephants, tracked everything they ate, tracked their behavior, which was just, I mean, you're standing near an elephant. It's an amazing day, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
So, yeah. So we did that. And then they, a lot of the elephants at the Elephant Nature Park are victims of landmines, because it's still actually really prevalent in the provinces in Southeast Asia. There's a lot of landmines that have been left behind. We would treat a lot of like foot injuries and then just kind of like different wounds. There was a lot of like wounds on some of the elephants' ears that they were tending to. And then I remember we got to kind of tag along with one of their behavioral specialists, because you don't even think about these things. But then when you really sit down, you're like, how do you get an elephant to agree to do treatments with you, you know? So they have someone on site that kind of helps work with these elephants over months on end to show them, you know, see, if you let me hold your foot and treat it, then you get this treat, or if you do this. So it's fun. They actually have like little routines for these elephants with their wounds. Like they walk into a certain area, they stick their foot up, and they know that they're getting all of the bananas that they want the whole time that they're doing that. It's
and
super
are these,
cool.
So the elephants, are they like wild elephants?
So they are all, every single one of them is rescued from some type of tourist industry. Yeah, animal tourism is such a huge problem in Southeast Asia. It's devastating, and especially with the elephants, because everybody loves elephants, so they know that they can profit off of them.
That sounds terrible.
It's so hard.
My wife, when she was in vet school, probably about 2 years ago, her roommate, who was a classmate of hers, went to Thailand for 2 weeks as an out rotation, and I don't remember now what group she worked with. But she worked with elephants for 2 weeks in Thailand, and just the pictures that she had and the videos and some of the experience she's had just sounded absolutely incredible. And so, like, I mean, obviously it's halfway around the world, but so foreign to me, like, you know, it sounded incredible.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Especially, you know, I haven't worked with other organizations outside of the Elephant Nature Park, but that place is just truly like a dream. And it's like in the middle of the jungle, in the middle of mountains. So you just feel like you're like on a different planet. It's wild.
So Amber, you said in your bio that you recently took your career online, and you talked about that a little bit in the beginning. I'm assuming that means that you're like writing articles, or what is it that you're actually writing?
So all I do now is I'm a writer. I don't do any of the social media or like virtual assisting anymore. I'm a full-time writer, and I just contribute to different pet blogs. Some of them are veterinary related. Some of them are just, you know, fun, lighthearted animal stories. And a lot of them are just animal health related, like explaining basic conditions, things to do in certain situations. And then there's like product reviews and things like that. But it is all animal related.
Who's the target audience for that? Is it pet owners? Is it the veterinary community, or?
So most of what I do now is pet owners. I used to write for I Love Veterinary, and I still do, you know, one article a month occasionally. But so when I write for I Love Veterinary, of course, it's geared more towards vet students and veterinarians and vet techs. But about 90% of what I do is geared towards the pet owner. So just very easy, lighthearted kind of, you know, kind of articles.
And you briefly touched on the virtual assistant, and I'm really curious about what that actually is. What is the virtual assistant?
Yeah, so I had no idea that this even existed before I learned about it. So I remember one day, you know, when you're a traveler and you just love traveling, you're always looking through, you know, people's photos of in beautiful destinations, right, and just, you know, being filled with envy. And there was one girl that I was following, her name's Avery, and I saw that she was talking about having an online business and how she learned how to be a virtual assistant with taking an online course. So she kind of gave me the info and I looked into it, and it's called 90 Day VA. And Esther Inman is the owner of the program. She's incredible. And basically that program taught me what a virtual assistant is. So basically it's just a personal assistant essentially online for any type of online task, whether it's managing someone's social media, creating content, creating basic graphics, or you can even go to like email management, calendar management. Some people go into like project management. It's really any type of online task that you can think of.
That sounds amazing. Jeff, I think we need one of these.
Right? I'm telling you, you don't realize how many businesses have a need for these things.
Well, I mean, Jeff and I both have jobs aside from the podcast. And there's days where we're like, oh, yeah, we're gonna focus on the podcast today. And if we had that virtual assistant, I think that would make our lives so much easier.
Definitely. I know it. I mean, there's... People ask, like, is there really any work in that field? And I'm like, oh my God, it's everywhere.
Really?
Yeah.
Maybe that's something that I think we should look into.
Yeah, for sure.
Definitely. And it's fun, like, to kind of, you can really truly be anything you want to be, you know, you can niche down. And of course I went into the avenue of writing. I love writing, and it's a way for me to still kind of work in the veterinary realm. But you can really be, you know, as creative as you want. I have a friend who does infographics with me in I Love Veterinary, where she just makes fun, you know, veterinary related graphics for them. And you don't have to be like a skilled graphic designer. There's different programs that make it easy for you now. So you really can, it's such a cool creative outlet to still work in your realm, but do something different.
I realize you said you're not doing that much anymore, but when you were doing that, were you doing that for like veterinarians, or who were you?
So whenever I was doing... I actually, when I started virtual assisting, the first like maybe 6 months that I did it, I was just taking on any type of client just to give me experience. So when I first started, I was working with a photographer. I was working with like a sunscreen brand. I was working with a realtor. So I was doing things like that in order to just kind of bulk up my resume.
Yeah.
And after a few months of doing that, I felt comfortable enough to pitch to different veterinary companies. And my very first company that I ended up writing for was I Love Veterinary.
Very interesting.
I wasn't really familiar with I Love Veterinary before kind of reading your bio and looking into it. So I guess that's how you found them. And then did they say like, hey, we want you to continue to write articles and, you know, this is kind of what we're looking for?
The process, I guess, for kind of interviewing, because people ask me a lot. I'm sorry, my kitten just screamed at me. You heard that in the background. Okay. But kind of the process for it is what I do essentially. If there's not like, you know, a job opening on their website, I just reach out to them with an email telling them what I do. And then I always send them a writing sample. So at this time, I didn't have any published writing work, you know, so I just wrote up like a mock blog. I think it was about like cherry eye or something, and sent it to them. And they were like, hey, this is good. This is kind of what we want. So let's move forward with the process. So it's not that scary. Everything's online, at least. You don't have to deal with rejection face-to-face.
Oh, so. Yeah.
Right? You just kind of send your work, and if they like it, they'll answer.
How would someone get involved in something like that? Like if Jeff and I wanted to do that, who would we contact?
Really, any company that you see online. Of my clients are separate. None of them are connected to each other. The only, like, common connection that I have with these clients is about 50% of my clients are on an app called Upwork. Have y'all ever heard of that?
Yes, I have heard of that.
So it's just like a freelancer platform where you look it up and they have a job option for every kind of freelance worker there is. And about 50% of my clients are on Upwork. So that way I can log my time on there. They send payments through there, but they still are all different companies.
Where you are right now, obviously something that's big in the news is coronavirus. Is that like a big problem where you are, or is it?
In Cambodia, it's not a problem as far as people getting sick. The general public is definitely scared about it.
Sure.
I don't know if you've seen, did you see in the news how Cambodia recently let a cruise ship dock in one of their coastal towns that had people that tested positive for the virus on there?
I saw that there was a cruise ship that had docked. I forgot that it was Cambodia, though.
Yeah. So that made people a little nervous, but... Other than that, like I may have seen, you know, a few more people with masks, but a lot of people wear them anyways because the pollution is, you know, kind of bad here.
Yeah.
So I haven't seen much. It's mostly just a lot of talk, a lot of sharing articles, a lot of people just maybe being diligent. But sure. In Cambodia specifically, I think we've only had one person here that tested positive for it. And I think it was someone who lived in Wuhan who traveled to a coastal town for Chinese New Year. So it's not like they... got it here. You know, they were just kind of bringing it with them.
For people that like kind of want to get going down this road of, you know, traveling more and going off to other countries and working with rescue groups or clinic environment or any of that, like what kind of advice would you give to somebody that is kind of wanting to take that leap?
So I think what I would do first, if you know that you have an interest in it, especially if you haven't ever traveled with a rescue organization before, I would recommend doing a group project first, just to kind of, you know, dip your toes into it, because it can be overwhelming for sure. And there's so many different veterinary travel groups now. Like there's Loop Abroad, like I talked about earlier. There's Vets Beyond Border. There's World Vets. And that way you can kind of get a taste, because these programs will work directly with rescues and they'll send vet techs to areas that need it. And I think they'll organize like your boarding and just kind of organize your rescue itinerary essentially. And that's always like a nice little introduction to it.
Okay.
So I always tell people, maybe do one of those projects first. Make sure that this is truly the life for you. You really want to do this. And then you can kind of dabble into reaching out to rescues on your own, you know.
And you said, so you're going to, I think it was Vietnam in April, is that right? So,
yes, Hoi An.
Hoi An. So what else? Like, do you have any plans to come back to the States anytime? Do you just kind of like think about, you know, or just kind of research other things that you can do near you and say, oh, that sounds great, I want to go over there? Or do you have it like more planned out further down?
So this is really the first time in my life that I don't have a plan, which if you know me, you know that that's wild, because that like stresses me out, you know, not having a set plan of what I'm doing.
Sure.
But I really don't have a plan right now. I just kind of am going with the flow and just taking it as it comes. And like I kind of did here, you know, I knew I've been in Cambodia for about 3 months now. I love the city, but I'm ready to move on. So I just kind of looked into some different options around me and decided on Vietnam. And I really hope to just continue to do this for at least the next year of my life. I really like this lifestyle and I really enjoy living abroad. So I can't see an end point at this time.
Well, that's great. It's awesome that you've just taken that life by the horns and said, I'm going to go live abroad and do all these amazing things. I think that's fantastic.
For sure.
It's been fun. And it's definitely been a way to just kind of shake up my routine. You know, because when you do volunteer trips before, you always knew they were coming to an end and you'll be back home and life will be back to normal soon. So
this is now your normal.
Exactly. And I do still, I'm a creature of habit. I love routine. So even wherever I am, I'm still on a set routine. Like I create a schedule I like. I have my own things that I like to do every day. So it's not like I'm just, you know, going free willy all the time. I have no idea what's going on. I do still have a routine everywhere I go.
Are there any other locales that you've looked into that you've thought, wow, sometime, like, I want to go there and do that thing that you've kind of got on your radar for somewhere down the road?
As far as like in the next year, you know, there's so many places in Southeast Asia. Vietnam was a big one for me because it's so vast and there's so many awesome things to see. So I'm excited for that. And then like I've traveled Thailand pretty extensively, but I might spend a little time over there. I'm really interested in going over to Indonesia because I hear that their animal welfare is lacking, but then they also have incredible organizations. So there's really cool groups to work with. So there's just so many options over here. Like Southeast Asia is so cool.
Yeah. And just thinking of not veterinary, What's some of your favorite places to visit that you've been to?
So really, it may appear that I'm more well-traveled than I actually am. The problem is that four of my volunteer trips have all been in Thailand. I love that place so dang much that I've been there a lot.
That's where the elephants are, right?
Yes, that is where the elephants are. Okay. I have only been to Thailand and different parts of Cambodia. I have so much to see still.
Okay.
Wow. That sounds incredible. I just can't imagine.
Robin's cousin, he makes movies, and he made this one recently. It was called Safari Holiday, I think it was called.
Okay.
And where this woman from New York, she's going through a divorce, and she decides to go on this trip to Africa, and she stumbles across this elephant sanctuary. Did you?
I loved it. And it was such a sweet, like, heartwarming movie.
It's one of those things where at veterinary professionals, we watch these things and we're like, this is so wrong. Like, when they put the catheter in the elephant's ear and they basically just taped it to the outside of the elephant's ear. We're just
will stay there all night. Yeah, right.
And then they gave it a whole 5-liter bag of fluids.
Right, exactly. I know. It cracks you up.
Yeah, it's funny. It's funny stuff. But, you know, just seeing that and thinking, wow, that would be amazing to go work on elephants. That would be something so crazy to do.
Honestly.
I would love to do at some point, but, you know.
These professionals, too, like, just watching them, they're freaking amazing. Like, the vets that work with them, you're just, like, in awe the whole time.
Let me ask you this. How do you find a cephalic vein on an elephant leg?
I don't even know if you do. Like, how could... I honestly think I actually did see them placing catheters in elephants' ears. And
was it the ears?
I remember the craziest thing I saw, because I was like, how do you take an elephant's temperature? Like, what are you doing? And they literally, when he uses the restroom, they stick the probe right in his stool. And that's how they know the temperature of the elephant. Yes, like right after they go. They stick a thermometer in there and gauge it. Yes.
Wow.
Right? Things you would never even think of.
I wouldn't think that would be accurate, but I guess it is.
I guess it's as accurate as it can be, you know?
Well,
it's
like,
accurate enough.
Right?
Yeah.
I can't imagine like trying to take a rectal temperature on an elephant and then suddenly have him get startled and get kicked. I would imagine that wouldn't be so good.
Yeah. It's such a wild experience. And I really hope, I think that's kind of a goal of mine going forward, is to work more with exotics and just kind of dabble into it, because I'm so interested in it, but I have no idea. Like, I have no knowledge when it comes to exotics.
Sure. And it's crazy to think too, like, you know, you're in one small section of the world there in Asia, and you can do these same things in Africa and Australia or New Zealand. Like, I'm sure these things exist all over the world, and
for sure,
just don't even know they're there until, you know, you see somebody doing it and it's like, wow,
right?
To figure out a way to go do that.
Exactly. I know. I have that feeling a lot, where I'll go to a new rescue and I'm like, geez, you would never even know that they're doing these incredible things on the other side of the world. Like, you have no idea until you go.
Yeah. For Dave and I, one of our mentors, when we went through the VTS process, Liz Houston was just down in Africa for like 2 weeks, and she posted a ton of pictures and videos online from South Africa and on safari and some of the workers, and just like seeing all that. And it's like you said earlier, it's like just otherworldly. Like, it's crazy to think that actually that actually exists, and that people do what we do in other places. And
I know, and it's mind blowing.
Gigantic animals.
it is truly wild.
And one final thing I wanted to bring up is that on your Instagram page, one of the things that I saw that I loved, and I actually put it into our little document that we kind of read off of. I don't remember exactly where it came from, but it was a quote that said, "Your path in vet med is entirely up to you." And then your comment after that was, "A lot of people think being a vet tech is a dead end field, and I'm here to tell you that your career is exactly what you make of it. I know several vet techs who have taken their careers to incredible heights and continue to soar. This career is not a dead end. It's your limitations that make it seem that way, and to chase your dreams no matter how big and make it happen." Of all your Instagram posts, that one spoke to me a lot. Of, this is exactly what you're doing, and exactly what Jeff and I are trying to bring to our listeners, is that vet med is not a dead end job. It is exactly what you make of it, and it sounds like you're doing exactly that. And
there is life beyond the clinic.
Thank you. It's so true, because I started this career thinking that okay, this is kind of, you know, what I'm going to be doing for the rest of my life. And that's why I went into emergency medicine, because I kind of had this thought where if I'm doing this forever, I better make it exciting, you know? And then I realized, you know, halfway along that there's so many different options that you can explore. Yeah. And this doesn't have to be, your life doesn't have to reside within the walls of an animal clinic. You truly can create your own path. Like, the world is so wild today that there's so many options, so many businesses you can create, so many different online ventures you can take. So we're really lucky in the sense that there's so many different paths that we can go down.
That's great.
Well, Amber, I know you're just starting out on your day, so we don't want to take up any more of your time. What does your day look like today? Are you headed out to go work at any of the clinics or anything?
So I actually just have a bunch of writing work to do today. Nice. So yeah, I'm just going to be at a cafe, just drinking coffee and working.
You're already at a cafe.
Yeah, there you are.
Right, exactly.
You're just at a virtual cafe.
Right.
Well, again, thank you so much for your time, and thank you for coming by. And Dave has one last question for you.
Which one should we do, Jeff? One, two, three.
Let's see.
Which one you want?
I say go for three.
All right, Amber, you ready?
I think so.
Would you, Jeff, I'm gonna switch it up to make it more relevant to what we've been talking about.
I like it.
Would you rather be a giant hamster or a tiny elephant?
Oh my God, a tiny elephant for sure. That sounds adorable, first of all. And oh my God, I don't know. Imagine being a tiny elephant like in a house. How wild would that be?
I know. It's true.
That would be a lot of fun.
That would be crazy.
I mean, people do have like little potbelly pigs or chickens or, you know.
Right? Yeah, that's kind of what I imagined. Yeah.
Yeah, like a backyard elephant.
Yeah, like a tiny, just, you know, maybe 100-pound elephant. Like,
yeah,
you know,
super manageable.
Sized.
Yeah.
And what would a giant hamster be like?
Oh, scary. Terrifying.
That would be scary, right?
It's gotta be
Can
like
you imagine little, with their same like little personalities, but actually big enough to do damage? Would, oh, no.
It like would be an ROUS.
Right?
Rodents of unusual size.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Like a capybara or something. Like,
yeah. Oh, yeah. Capybara.
Oh,
yeah.
Yeah. You forget. Those things are pretty dang big.
Yeah.
They're like the size of a mid-sized dog.
Yeah.
They are. I saw a picture the other day of someone holding one in a clinic, and I was like, oh my God, thing is huge.
I used to, when I did my internship, I worked at a zoo in up north of Boston, and we had capybara, and let me tell you, they're kind of disgusting animals.
Really? Oh, wow.
They like swim in water and they poop in the same water. So it's just a big old mess. And like,
oh my gosh,
guys.
I had that kind of experience.
They're a little bit cute though.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah. I learned that otters smell really, really bad. I did a little volunteer thing at a local zoo in Texas and I was amazed at how bad otters smelled.
Well, I guess they make up for it in cuteness.
Yeah,
exactly.
They do.
Yeah. You can't even be mad about it.
Right.
Just real bad. Well, again, thank you so much, Amber, for coming by.
Yes, thank you, Amber.
And,
thank you for having me.
Kind of shining a little bit of light on this kind of avenue, because, like I said, we had one guest on a few episodes ago who does some work with World Vets, and so she kind of talked a little bit about that. But I know this is
I listened to her episode.
And, you know, I know there's so many people that would love to do this kind of thing and are just like, I can't pull that off, or I don't know how to start, or what have you. So I know they'll love to hear it. So,
good. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely, and definitely keep Vet Tech Cafe in mind in your travels. You know, let us know, you know, where you're at, or if you
have a
cool story or something, send us a message, and we'd love to chat about it and just kind of follow where you're headed in the future. So,
yeah, thank you guys, and I
thanks,
guess there might be one other thing I want to add, if that's okay.
Oh. Sure, go ahead.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So I guess this is just a lesson that I've learned along the way, because I know that I beat myself up about it a lot. But it's to realize that there's no like one path to get to your goal. Because I know I've tried so many different things to achieve, you know, the full travel or full-time travel lifestyle. You know, I tried saving and volunteering for 1 month out of the year. I tried being an English teacher. And then finally, I started working online. So, and I would beat myself up along the way if those things didn't work out exactly how I expected them to, you know.
Sure.
So that's just, I guess, one thing that I would really, you know, like people to know is that, again, there's not one set path to your goal. And you might try a lot of different things along the way. And each option might not work out the way you expected them to. But just keep trying, because if it's something you can't stop thinking about every day, then you just have to try a different path and see where that takes you.
It's great advice.
Very, very true. Very true. Well, thank you so much again, and we hope to talk with you soon.
Yes,
thanks, Amber.
Thank you.
Thanks, Amber. All right, have a good day.
You too.
Dave and Jeff would like to thank you for listening to the Vet Tech Cafe podcast today. As we talk about difficult issues facing our profession and chat with colleagues who have strong opinions of those issues, we feel it is important to note that the opinions and views expressed by Dave, Jeff, or our guests on the Vet Tech Cafe podcast are solely theirs and theirs alone and do not represent any other person, business, institution, or any other entity. If you have any questions relating to this, please email us at vettechcafe@gmail.com. Thanks again for stopping by the Vet Tech Cafe.